Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking physical therapy on the program. And we're going to start with a look at knee pain and surgery with our two guests. Our physical therapist back once again, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Jill, nice to have you back.
It's great to be here.
And as well, Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Lori, good to see you as well.
Awesome to be here on a beautiful Monday.
So as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. Tell us about your knee pain. Are you struggling with your meniscus or your ACL? Are you considering surgery? We'll take your general physical therapy questions as well. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill, let's start with you. You brought a study that looks at the meniscus, and maybe for those who don't know, where is the meniscus and what does it do?
Sure. Well, the meniscus is located in your knee, and we have one on the inside and one on the outside, the medial and lateral meniscus, and they help with shock absorption. They help with fluid pump. They help with load distribution. Those are kind of three of their very big jobs. And as we age, they can get a little wear and tear. So you can have some small degenerative tears in your meniscus. And the million-dollar question has always been, oh, when you have these tears in your meniscus, and unfortunately a lot of these tears occur in a zone where they can't be repaired. So the question is, when you have tears in these zones, do we go ahead and take part of your meniscus out? Knowing fully well that when we take part of your meniscus out, the rest of the meniscus has to step up and take more load.
Yeah.
So because it doesn't grow back.
Right.
So the million-dollar question is, well, gosh, if I have these tears in my meniscus, should I have a meniscectomy or should I try physical therapy? What should I do? And this was a very nice systematic review that was done, and they took all level one randomized controlled trials. So they took really good studies, and they kind of threw them all in a melting pot, looked at the data. They analyzed over 2,000 patients. About half were women, half were men, so a pretty good split. The average age in this study was 53 years old, plus or minus four, so kind of the middle-aged individual. And then what they basically looked at was their patient-reported outcome measures, so looked at kind of what the patient said. And there was no difference in functional patient-reported outcomes. The quality of evidence was really high. Their clinical outcomes, basically what we look at clinically, their range of motion, their strength, things like that. Their pain difference and their quality of life between groups who had a arthroscopic partial meniscectomy and a group of patients who went the physical therapy route. So in other words, there was no difference between surgery and physical therapy in this group of 2,000 people, middle-aged, who had some degenerative changes in their knees. Now, these were what we call non-obstructive meniscal symptoms. In other words, they weren't causing their knee to lock up. So they weren't blocking their knee range of motion. It's just like, I have some knee pain there, and what should I do about it? Oh, I have some meniscal tears. What should I do? Should I go the PT route or should I have surgery? And basically, there was no difference between these two groups.
Right. So that's a really important factor. And one of the things that you mentioned in terms of the function of the meniscus is that it bears load. And if you take some of it out, the rest of it has to step up. And the meniscus has worn out due to degeneration and wear and tear. So now you're taking a load that the meniscus didn't handle very well in the beginning,
and you're
actually increasing it. And interestingly, when they looked at the outcomes of this surgery, when you look 5 years down the road, the group that had the meniscectomy showed greater risk for progression of osteoarthritis and mechanical symptoms than did the group that had physical therapy. So we look, you know, both at the immediate symptoms and function, as well as thinking about what's going to happen down the road. Every time you lose a bit of meniscus, you increase the risk for further deterioration of the meniscus that remains.
And historically, we didn't know better. It was one of those, sure. Oh, what were we thinking? People would have a tear in their meniscus, and they would remove the entire meniscus.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
And those are the people that were in line for total joint replacements in their early 50s. So what we've learned is it's a sparing type of surgery. They take out the minimal that they need to take out because they want to spare the meniscus, because we know, as Lori alluded to, it's got to step up and take load. You can't just take your whole meniscus out.
Right. And Jill made some other good points about obstruction. And so if you have some meniscus, whether it's a piece of meniscus that's flipped into the mm-hmm. joint, or you have a loose body that's blocking motion, it is important to get that surgically mm-hmm. fixed. You must get that surgically fixed. And if you have tried physical therapy, if you've done everything you're supposed to do and you're still having symptoms, specifically swelling, mm-hmm. The swelling is a sign that your knee does not like what's happening. It is better to think about surgery, because that continuous inflammation and swelling that's in your knee is deleterious for the long-term health of your knee. So there are some specific subsets of patients that may actually have to go on and have surgery, but by far the majority still need to have a full, complete physical therapy program first, and that means you need to do it.
Right, and I'm probably a classic example. I fit this age demographic, and I probably have in my left knee posteriorly a little degenerative changes, because when I do a lot of deep squatting, I can feel it. And on Saturday, I was in a deep squat position for about 4 hours volunteering. We were volunteering for Triforce Schools, and we had to write the triathlon numbers on little kids, right on their legs and stuff. And so I was in a deep squat for 4 hours. And, you know, my knee was achy in the back the rest of the day, maybe a little swollen. But you know what? By the next day, I was totally fine. So just keep plugging on, keep plugging on. I know to avoid that deep range of motion, and I'm totally okay.
Well, we have a lot of people with questions about their knees, and maybe we should take some calls here. Mark and Lafarge, we go to you first. Mark, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. You have been a fantastic resource in the state of Wisconsin for as long as I can remember, and I'm old.
So thank you, Mark.
For shows like this and many others. Here's an interesting tidbit and a warning for others, but I'm really interested in the insight of your guests. I had unrelated surgery, and before I had that, they gave me, as a preventative, Cipro, an antibiotic. I didn't think anything of it. And 2 weeks after my surgery, I couldn't walk. And I've had arthritic knees from a farm injury decades ago, but I'm very physically active, walking an hour or two a day, or skiing or biking, playing hockey still at my age. And so my theory is that my muscle tone helped keep that arthritis in check, bone-on-bone arthritis in check. But I literally couldn't walk, and then I found that there is a black box warning from the FDA. I've had a ruptured Achilles tendon once, and it warned against ruptured tendons, tendonitis, muscle problems, and joint problems. So I probably never should have had this drug administered. I'm wondering if your guests are familiar with this. It must be statistically significant enough that it would merit the warning from the FDA. And then what is the best treatment protocol? I'm going through physical therapy. It maybe has stabilized the problem. I can walk. But is this reversible? You know, what's the long-term prognosis?
What's the line? Yeah.
Right.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. So there is, as Mark alluded to, a black box warning with regards to Cipro and tendinopathy. And I always thought it was more Achilles tendinopathy than patellar tendinopathy. And so just the physicians that I work with are very hesitant to prescribe it for that reason. We typically go another route. But you have to be very cognizant. Some people are allergic or have sensitivities to other antibiotics. So it's definitely something to be aware of. With regards to recovery, I think most people do make a recovery once you're off of the antibiotics. It may take a little bit longer if you're a little bit older. I work with a generally younger population. So we see, we don't see it very often. And when we do, we see it recover rather quickly when we take them off the antibiotic.
I rarely see this prescribed for our patients. It's just not a first line antibiotic. Right. I'm not sure why that was the choice for you. If there was some other reason they picked this antibiotic for you, but it has certainly been associated with Achilles tendinopathy.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. So thanks for letting thanks for that reminder. That's really good to keep in mind.
Appreciate it, Mark. Thank you for calling. John in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hello. Thanks for the program, and thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
About 7 years ago, I had a full replacement on my right knee due to just long-term wear and tear. I was 65 then. Lately, the last 6 months or so, the knee has started swelling, often with very minimal physical activity, sometimes just a stiff walk with the dog. I'm wondering what might be causing this and what kind of solutions there might be. I had the knee x-rayed and they couldn't find anything. I also had blood work done twice to make sure that it's not just infected. So what do you think?
So you had this, the x-ray and the blood work done very recently, John?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, great. So are you still doing any exercise, strengthening exercises or anything, any post-operative rehabilitation for your total knee arthroplasty that you had 7 years ago?
I've been doing minimal physical activity lately just because it does swell when I do this, and the inflammation is becoming chronic, and I'm a little concerned about that. So I've been doing very little now. Over the years, I've done lots of bike and ski marathons and that kind of thing.
So did your surgeon take a look at this?
Not recently. I have an appointment set up for September.
Okay. All right. So who did the x-rays and the blood work? Was that your primary?
Orthopedics at UW.
Okay. All right. So it could be some loosening of your components. Sometimes we see that happen over time, and that bit of loosening or vibration or little movement that happens can irritate the knee. So seeing the surgeon would be a good start. You might also try just a pull-on knee sleeve during activity to see if that controls the swelling and helps with some stability. And it's a relatively inexpensive thing to trial. And when people are going back, or even sometimes for the first time to see their physician, I like them to road test a couple of the 100%. Possible interventions first, so that you don't go to the surgeon you've been waiting for 2 months to get in, and they say, try a knee sleeve, and then, if it works, it doesn't work. So try some of those things ahead of time and see if you can find an intervention that works or doesn't work, and that will give them additional feedback. But the first thing that tends to come to mind is some loosening of the components.
Which wouldn't show up on a plain film necessarily.
Correct.
So I would definitely try a knee sleeve. If you have an access to a pool, I would try getting in a pool to see if the compressive forces of the water can help with the swelling. I would maybe try easy stationary biking at a very low resistance to see if you can kind of flush the knee out a little bit and try some of those things. And then you'll have more information going into your appointment with your physician.
And good luck, John.
Exactly. Let us know how you turn out.
Yeah. Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. We have a number of callers online, and we will get to them in just a minute. A reminder, our guests today, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne Brody, our physical therapists. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer, Clara Neipert, our producer on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy issues on the program today, where we've zeroed in a bit on dealing with knees and knee pain, but we can take other questions as well, certainly as you listen in, think about joining in. Bob in Wheaton, Illinois, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I'm a little bit off topic. I'm a 77-year-old, highly active adult. I swim and exercise 3 to 5 times a week. I have bone on bone in my right knee. I also have a distortion of the fibula bone with arthritis. I have no pain. It's amazing. And I just wanted to know what does the future hold for me? I do have a surgeon who wants to do like a knee replacement. I reject that because I think diet and nutrition and exercise are my way out.
We should
it out in a general way.
Yeah.
We should just give Bob a microphone
exactly.
And let him keep doing
exactly.
This.
Can you repeat that for the listeners, Bob?
So diet, yeah. Exercise, yeah. Being mindful.
Right,
and
right.
Here we have somebody, this is the exact mm-hmm. reason why surgeons say we don't operate on x-rays or images, because here we have a 77-year-old active individual who you look at his plane films and you think, oh my goodness, how can he possibly walk? But clearly he's doing everything right, from load management, from weight management, from exercise, from strengthening. I would stay out of the doctor's office if I were you.
But still, there's an issue, isn't there, Bob, or is there an issue?
No, there is not an issue. So you have your knee replaced or any joint replaced, as our surgeons like to say, when the bad days are winning. Right. When your world gets smaller, when you stop doing activities, when you stay home because you have pain or you're afraid to go out and do stairs or that your knee's going to give way, whatever. Bob doesn't have any of those issues. He may go to his grave in, 30 years.
Right.
With that same knee without a knee replacement.
Exactly.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do not make decisions based solely on imaging.
Yeah, there you go, Bob.
Thank you for that, Bob. And he's so right. Like, diet and exercise, it is, when you go back and you look at the literature on almost any orthopedic issue or many other issues in terms of your health, like the interventions that we know have an impact are diet and exercise.
Yeah.
Everything else is, moderate evidence, low evidence, maybe high evidence for one or two things. But for the most part,
diet and exercise,
at the top of the list.
Absolutely.
Bob, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Katie in Fond du Lac will give you a chance to join in here. Hi, Katie.
Hi there. Thank you, folks, for taking my call. I really appreciate this resource. This is off topic once again. I've had some profound sacroiliac pain for the last year or so. I did see an osteopath who gave me a cortisone injection, and there was no help at all. I have since been doing exercises prescribed by a physical therapist, but the progress has been painfully slow. Am I on the right track? Do I just endeavor to persevere? I guess I just need your wise words.
Yes, persevere. Persevere, because you said you are getting better. But it's the slow boat. So the SI joint is a really stable joint, and it bears a tremendous amount of load. It transfers the load basically from your pelvis up to your spine and up the kinetic chain. So it bears a tremendous amount of load. It doesn't have a lot of mobility. So the good news is you got a cortisone injection and it didn't get any better. So it's not an inflammatory process that we sometimes worry about when you have SI joint pain. I would say absolutely stick with PT, and it is going to be the slow boat. And I don't know your age, but the older we are, the slower that boat goes, I'm telling you. There's someone there. It takes a long time, and a lot of it has to do with changing how you move, changing how you engage your muscles to minimize loads across that joint. Jill wants to say something.
Yeah, and it sounds like you've been given exercises for this, which is wonderful. And I would just hope that your physical therapist also really thoroughly screened your lumbar spine. Because my first thought is, if you had a cortisone injection and it didn't help, is that actually the driver? So I would just want to be sure that I had cleared her lumbar spine really well and made sure that her lumbar spine wasn't a contributing factor like hypermobile,
I like that. You know, so the one of the questions would be, you had a cortisone injection, but did you also have lidocaine with it? So if you had lidocaine with it where it numbed the SI joint and you had no immediate pain relief in that first few hours, then Jill's right. The SI joint isn't the source of your pain. Good point, Jill.
Gee, thanks, Lori.
Good points from both of you. All right, Katie, thanks for calling. So get that checked. Get that checked out. Rich in Two Rivers, we go to you now. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, thank you for the phone call. I retired from therapy 8 or 9 years ago, and I was working in a private practice outside of Rochester, Minnesota, and I had a lot of Mayo Clinic referrals. Mm-hmm. And at the time, they had they were really into meniscus regeneration, and it was really complicated because you had to be non-weight bearing for 6 months, and you had to be on a CPM machine for 8 hours a day.
Yikes!
But I did get I got a 16-year-old that actually went through the whole process, and I rehabilitated him. I just want to know what the general consensus is on meniscus regeneration nowadays.
I would say that I don't see as much meniscus regeneration as I see meniscal transplants. So meniscal transplants seems to be a little bit more commonplace. So they literally take out your old meniscus and they go to what I call the meniscus store. And they take a lot of measurements and make sure that they can get a good fitting meniscus cadaverically. And then they drop it in right through where the meniscus attach at the roots. They drop in little posts with the tibial bone and put those in. I have seen a handful of those in the demographic I work with, which is 18 to 22 year olds. I would say the lateral meniscus transplants do incredibly well. I've only seen one or two medial meniscus transplants, and they did okay, not as good as the lateral meniscal transplants. But I think that's probably where we're going more so than meniscal regeneration.
Yeah, I don't see regeneration because the meniscus doesn't regenerate.
Right.
And Jill alluded at the top of the show that they used to take the meniscus out because they thought it did regenerate, and that's because of the pooling of blood and the concave surface of the tibia, and then that will create fibrocartilage, but fibrocartilage doesn't last more than 12 months.
There you go, Rich. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich, for that.
Appreciate your call. Rick in Monroe, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, lately I've been having some problems with my right knee. I used to have problems years ago with it kind of cracking and pain in it, and they said that the lining under the kneecap was wearing out. But after I exercised and walked quite a bit, I walked to work and back, it stopped hurting. But I retired 2 years ago, and I haven't done a lot of things, you know, exercise and things like that. But lately, when I mow the lawn or do something strenuous, it doesn't hurt until I come in, and at night I'll be laying in bed and it'll feel like somebody's jabbing a knife underneath my kneecap.
Yeah.
So
you probably have, there's articular cartilage or lining, like you said, on the underside of that kneecap. And it sounds to me when you were active and walking to work and doing good strengthening exercises, you probably had really good mobility there and distributed the load on the underside of that kneecap evenly. And now a little bit more sedentary, and then mowing the lawn would be walking on an uneven terrain without a good baseline strength and baseline mobility, that's probably problematic. Lori's shaking her head yes.
Yeah, it brings up one of my favorite words. I have a few favorite words the world, and one of them is homeostasis.
Oh yes.
So, you know, when you were walking and exercising, you and your knee, you were sort of in homeostasis. Your knee is like, yeah, all right, this is all good. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with this. And then you stop, and then you start and go do something like lawn mowing on an intermittent basis. And you don't have that baseline where you and your knee were in agreement that this activity was good. So the knee kind of got used to sitting around, you know, and then all of a sudden you ask it to do a fairly intense activity, such as mowing the lawn, if you're pushing. And as Jill said, uneven terrain, kneecaps do not like uneven terrain. So I think the answer, well, what's the answer, Rick?
More exercise.
Yep, getting back to your regular walking on a level surface, starting out at a low level and working your way up, and whatever other exercises you were doing. But you have to do it slowly so your knee doesn't scream at you, just working your way slowly back into those things.
And I would say a visit with a physical therapist, one or two visits down at the Monroe Clinic or something, just to make sure that you're mm-hmm. loading it appropriately to keep yourself kind of in that homeostasis as you progress would be really important.
Right, and you might need a couple strengthening exercises mm-hmm. to support your kneecap. But in terms of, for example, surgical interventions for the undersurface of your kneecap, they don't exist. So yeah. exercise is going to be, that's going to be it.
Good luck, Rick. Thank you for calling. Catherine in Waukesha, we're on to you. Hi, Catherine.
Yes, and you've touched on a few of my problems. And maybe exercise is a thing. I do walk 20 to 30 minutes each morning. I use a trekking pole. And I kind of am, instead of progressing, I seem to be regressing. So because of your advice, I started going to physical therapy. Tomorrow is going to be my third visit. It's just not helping as far as strengthening. We're doing kind of strengthening the thigh muscles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Catherine, and you've had two knee replacements, right?
Two knees, and then I did have a left hip in 2013. So I'm just looking for advice on how do I pursue, and I kind of walk around like a dottery old person. I am old, but I shouldn't be looking like I do. So I'm just looking for advice on how I can, do I just give up?
No, heck no.
We might have to change her mode, change things up a
little
bit.
Right. We have to change your expectation. So this is visit number three. So Rome was not built in a day. Okay, you have a long history of orthopedic issues and probably a long history of moving like a doddering old person. All that has to be changed. They have to build the infrastructure. It's like building a house. You start with the infrastructure, the frame. They're going to work on mobility. They're going to work on strength. And it's going to take time because the older we are, the slower we have to go, lest we aggravate these tissues that have been used in a certain way for a long time. So I think the word of the day for you will be patience and continuing with the therapy.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. And maybe trying different modes of activity too. So mm-hmm. you've been walking with your trekking poles a lot. Maybe trying and using your muscles differently, stationary bike, something like that mm-hmm. Might be helpful too, just to mix it up a little bit.
And walking a different direction.
Exactly.
Instead of walking forward, walk backwards for a bit.
Or a different place.
Different
surface. Yep. All good suggestions.
Catherine, thank you and good luck. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Carrie in Janesville next. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So last year at this time, I could hardly walk, and I found out that I have heel spurs growing in the bottom of my heel. And my doctor gave me an arch support and taught me how to stretch for a good 5 minutes before I even get out of bed in the morning. So pickleball is fine. I can still play pickleball. But when I'm walking fast, that really affects my foot after, and then I'm kind of just wondering the future of these heel spurs, what to do, like when I get older, and will the big lump ever go away?
So let's talk about the big lump. So a heel spur is a traction apophysitis. So basically what happens is when your plantar fascia tugs and tugs and tugs and tugs on the bottom of your heel, you just lay down more bone. So that's what that heel spur is. Some people can have heel spurs and have no pain whatsoever. So similar to Bob earlier, who has bone on bone, has no pain. Just because you have heel spurs doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have pain. It sounds like you have heel spurs and pain. Arch support is a great thing. Quick walking is probably due to the fact that when she's dorsiflexing more and she's striking with her heel harder and increased ground reaction forces.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm wondering if doing some sort of intrinsic strengthening, some calf strengthening, all of those things might be helpful.
Right, at a specific speed. So
yes.
It's interesting that pickleball doesn't hurt, but It may be have to do with the amount of time or the repetitive. Look at Jill. She's got her mouth open. She wants to say something. Go ahead, Jill.
So good pickleball players, I've learned this, don't move their feet that much. Oh. They're really good. They come up by the kitchen and they're really good at some weight shifting and good arm movements. Mm-hmm. And they're okay. Very quick in their upper extremities. So okay. Maybe that is
maybe.
Why.
So in terms of the future, will the bump go away? No, but it doesn't mean that it's symptomatic. What you need to do is keep your plantar fascia flexible like you have been, and maybe, as Jill said, some strengthening. If you're still having symptoms when you get out of bed in the morning, then the night splint would be the way to go. My favorite being the Darko that goes on the top of your foot and not behind your heel. So
there you go. Might take a look at your shoes, too.
Yep.
Shoe wear would be really important. That's a good point, Larry.
I try to change mine every 500 miles
yep,
or so.
That's okay. That's usually what they say, between like 300 and 500 miles, yeah.
Eric in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi. My name is Eric, 33 years old, healthy male. 2 years ago, I fell ice fishing, and my right knee hit the ice pretty hard. Now I have... extreme sensitive to the touch when my knee is bent or if I kneel down on the floor, only in a specific area. Other than that, I can run, jump, squat, everything is fine. Hmm. Curious if there's something I should be doing for stretching or vitamins, ice, heat, or is it like a scar that needs to be looked at?
Where specifically, when you kneel, Eric, do you feel this? Is it on your kneecap or to the side of your kneecap?
On my kneecap, but on the outside, the right side of my right knee.
Is that where you landed?
Yeah, my right leg gave out and my knee hit the ice.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like a patellofemoral kind of mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the sensitivity, when you touch that area, you could try what we would call desensitization. Mm-hmm. And that is, taking a couple fingers and rubbing in that area, although it seems counterintuitive. And sometimes what it does is it just calms down some of those nerve endings in the area. You're not getting swelling or anything like that?
No. And on my day-to-day, it's fine. It's just like if I were to kneel down to change a diaper or, play with a kid on the floor, I can kneel on my knee. If it hits that right side, it's just about crippling.
So it sounds like okay. It's almost like deep knee
deep,
flexion, like
yep.
hitting
yep.
the facet.
Right. Yeah. So it sounds like when you landed, you maybe scuffed up the undersurface mm-hmm. of your
That's
kneecap
yeah.
In that spot. So. Given the sort of fuzziness of us being able to discern precisely what's going on, a visit or two to physical therapy and have them look at it and examine it, look at you kneeling, watch you squatting, looking at your posture and see if they have any suggestions. Sometimes a little bit of taping mm-hmm. at your kneecap to shift the load on the undersurface of the kneecap can help, and perhaps unloading that for a while with the taping technique might work.
Right.
I'm just thinking off the top of my head.
And I always think about like plunging. So you
plunging,
there's,
yes.
There's small little plungers that you can use that kind of pull the patella mm-hmm. up mm-hmm. and offload it the same way that Lori was alluding to with tape. And that might be something your physical therapist does
right.
as well.
Right. Yeah. So having a PT look at it and see if any of those suggestions would be strategies for you would work, Eric.
Yeah. Good luck, Eric. Thank you. Mac, from Dent County emailed us. After being treated by a physical therapist for 4 years for knee problems, Mac has been doing a series of stretches and strengthening exercises, including half lunges, all to great effect. Within the past 3 months, when Mac does a half lunge, their knee has begun to crack, pop quite loudly. No associated pain. Is this something to be concerned about? or cause Mac to revisit a therapist?
We get that question almost every day. Can you hear my shoulder crunching? Can you hear my knee crunching? And all of our joints make noise. It can be fluid moving around in the joint. It can be air escaping. It could be a tendon sliding over something. And the general rule is, unless it is painful, it's not to be worried about. If it blocks your range of motion, it becomes painful, then those are times we worry about it.
Right. I would just keep an eye on it,
yep,
only because it represents a change,
yep,
from how it has been in the past. And one of the questions is has he changed somehow the mechanics of what he's doing? Is his foot placement a little bit different? Are the shoes worn out and not absorbing shock? Is the knee turned in a little, turned out a little? Any of those things could affect that. So I would just keep an eye on it for now.
Listener emailed, the muscle where they sit hurts, especially when driving. And a friend said it's probably a hamstring.
Could be.
What could it be?
Well, yeah. It could be the hamstring inserting right on your sit bone. So it could be that. It could be piriformis.
Could be piriformis.
Referring more down, mm-hmm, to, you know, having a little, mm-hmm, bit of referred sciatic pain down to your sit bone. It's probably worth investigating because you certainly don't want to make it worse. I would say a visit to, mm-hmm, a physical therapist just to kind of get to the problem would be a good idea without knowing a mechanism of injury.
Yeah,
it's hard to tell.
The question is, why did it start? But
correct,
one of the strategies you can try in the meantime is taking a, mm-hmm, couple hand towels and rolling them up and putting the long way underneath your thighs so that you're not sitting right on your sit bones when you're driving. And that may give you some temporary relief until you can get in to see somebody and figure out what's going on.
Okay. On to Rick in Wauwatosa now. Rick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was into the emergency room on one occasion because I thought I had a clot in my leg. And then they referred me to a vascular surgeon. So I went into his office and had Doppler work done on both legs. And I was told that the valves in the veins were not functioning properly, and that means that there's a lot of blood that doesn't get back to where it needs to be and, you know, and recirculated. Okay, then after the Doppler, and the doctor told me this, he asked me if I had any questions. My question basically is there a way to treat and improve? And all he said was compression socks. Okay, so I've been doing that, but I know that and I've got varicose veins, and I've been using compression socks on account of that, but I would like something that would be more, that would treat the issue rather than just a Band-Aid type approach.
Yeah.
Well, there's not any therapy that can change the valves, right, in your vascular system. So in terms of therapy for these kinds of conditions, we typically provide people with ways to exercise and stay healthy in the presence of this underlying condition. We cannot change the underlying condition. In terms of exercise, we recommend a pool, mm-hmm, because a pool's hydrostatic pressure increases the vascular return to the heart and prevents that pooling of blood. So if you want to be active, that's the way to do that. If the issue in your lower extremities was due to lymph, we have physical therapists who specialize in lymphedema, but this doesn't sound like lymph. This sounds like a
PBD.
Vascular,
yeah,
kinds of, mm-hmm, issue. So, mm-hmm, you know, in terms of exercise, a pool is the place for you to go, and whatever other interventions your vascular surgeon suggests for you. But physical therapy itself cannot change the valves in your veins.
All right.
So thanks for that call.
Rick, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We'll get to Carl in Eau Claire in just a second, but a reminder here, we're taking physical therapy questions today with our two guests, Jill Tine Nissenbaum, professor and the doctor of physical therapy program at UW, and Lori Tine Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. looking at physical therapy issues today with our two UW-Madison therapists, physical therapists, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne Brody. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in. Carl in Eau Claire, we will give you a chance now to join in. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So in June of 2022, I had a MCL repair and PCL replacement. Surgery went fine, and the physical therapy for me was a struggle. I, you know, attended all the sessions, did all my homework at home, all my exercises and stretches. I just was not getting the range of motion that they wanted. So every time I'd, you know, have a follow-up with my surgeon, he would say, well, maybe we would have to, you know, do a manipulation. Mm-hmm. That kind of scared me. So my wife had some success with dry needling, and she was kind of chipping away at me, and finally I agreed to do it. And after about four or five sessions, they actually dry needled my quadricep mm-hmm. muscle right above my knee, mm-hmm. and I gained about 20 degrees mm-hmm. after, I mean, only a few sessions. So I guess I'm wondering, what's your opinion on dry needling as a form of physical therapy?
Yeah,
I'm guessing it worked for me, mm-hmm. but I'm still...
Jill would probably like to comment on that.
Sure.
Carl?
Well, first of all, Carl, a PCL replacement with an MCL repair is, in my mind, a major surgery. We don't see those very often, and the rehab is a tough go. So it really is. It is not a typical surgery that we see. So... it's not surprising that you had some difficulties with it. With regards to dry needling, the reason you couldn't get your knee to move was because you had muscle guarding or muscle tightness, then dry needling would be indicated. So the indications for dry needling are with someone who has what we say a trigger point or that knot in the muscle, which is causing the muscle to be weaker, it's causing it to tighten up, and it's causing it not to be able to stretch out. And so we can use dry needling to kind of alleviate all those things. So a physical therapist who is trained in dry needling would know whether dry needling would be effective to increase your range of motion, things like that. If the problem was coming from inside your joint, then dry needling wouldn't be indicated. But in this case, it sounded like there was some muscle guarding or muscle protection, and it worked for you. So a good physical therapist would know if dry needling was indicated or not. And dry needling is just one intervention within a multifaceted program. So I'm confident Carl had to continue with all of his other exercises and rehabilitation and things like that. Once he got dry needled, he didn't get to stop those things.
It's not a substitute.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Carl, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Susan, in the UP of Michigan, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have a diagnosis of greater trochanter bursitis. I've had it a year and a half, and I'm getting better, I think, because of the cortisone shots I've been getting. At least four shots now, maybe five shots. Getting to the point where it's pretty darn good. I'm wondering if I should have one more kind of to top it off, if there's a negative effect of the cortisone shots.
So, Susan, are you also seeing a physical therapist for some rehabilitation and strengthening exercises on top of your cortisone injections?
Yes, I was faithfully doing physical therapy, and then I had a traumatic event this winter, and I quit doing the exercises for a while, and it seemed to me like I was actually getting better not doing the exercises. I was kind of wondering maybe that they were actually irritating.
Right, not the right ones.
Right. Yeah, sometimes the physical therapy exercise program, especially in something like greater trochanteric bursitis, it's fairly complicated because there are a number of muscles that feed into that band, and there's mechanical issues, there are postural issues, it's a pretty big bag of issues that can contribute to this. So getting the dosage of your physical therapy exercises is difficult. So sometimes it's a matter of which exercises, and other times it's a matter of how many of those exercises you do. And sometimes we default to, oh, you should do 3 sets of 10 or whatever, and that may not be right. You should do however many of the exercises feel like it's the right amount. If you start to have pain or fatigue, or you change how you're doing the exercise, then that's when it needs to stop, whether you're at repetition 7 or repetition 13.
Right. So I think before I got another cortisone injection, I might revisit the physical therapist and say, this is where I am. I'm doing really well. Can we talk about kind of titrating up an exercise program and see how you do with that before you go and have another cortisone injection? Because there are some long-term issues with that many cortisone injections.
Right. That's a lot of cortisone for your system. So.
And as I've heard you say in the past, you know, if you're going for a long period of time on a set, you really need to be adjusting and the physical therapist can do that.
Yes, right, exactly. Exactly. And things dropped off, and that feedback that things got a little better will help the therapist understand that whatever you did before was probably an overdose of activity for you. And sometimes we have to stop and think about whatever else the patient is doing during the day. The exercise program may be fine in isolation, but is too much when combined with the rest of the activities the person is engaging in the rest of their life.
Yep. Yeah. Susan, thank you very much for calling. Nancy and Woodruff, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I have a question, not about the knee, but I have a complete rupture of the long head of the biceps tendon.
Yeah.
And and I'm not sure how I did it, because I would think something that severe I would remember. But I did have a nasty fall last October, and it might have been fraying given my age and all that, and that might have done it. But I've been through physical therapy in November and December. I had a ultrasound-guided injection at the end of December, and another one, and this was before I knew it was ruptured, and then I had another one after an MRI where it indicated that it was a complete rupture of that tendon. I had another injection in July. So I'm understanding that they don't do surgery to repair a
long head. Right, correct.
Okay, and that as long as the short head is still
Well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So interestingly, one of the common surgeries we do is a long head of the biceps tendon takedown. Mm-hmm. So they actually cut it.
Right.
So because for many people, it is the pain driver. So in your case, what you basically did is a self-tenotomy.
Right. You saved yourself some money. I had a patient come in last spring with massive bruising in his upper arm. And I said, oh, dude, when did you rupture the long head of your biceps? Right. He had no idea that he had even done it, despite all the bruising on his arm. People can function very well without the long head as long as the short head
Absolutely.
Is intact.
Because and you have other muscles that flex your elbow and things like that. I actually ruptured somebody's long head of the biceps tendon in clinic.
In shoulder clinic.
I did resisted elbow flexion, and it popped.
Oh,
and the patient looked at me. He was in his mid-70s. Yeah. He looked at me and he said, oh, my gosh, that feels so much better. and the shoulder surgeon said, you probably saved us a surgery. So it was probably very frayed, kind of like yours, Nancy. Yep. And it was just literally the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, that's funny. So you do need to do your rehab for the rest of your rotator cuff.
Yes.
And just as an aside, if you rupture the long head or the biceps at the elbow, that is a surgical repair. They do not leave those. I saw somebody on the bike trip this summer on Ragbri who had a big brace on his elbow. I looked at him. I said, dude, what happened? He's like, oh, I ruptured the long head of the biceps
at the insertion.
And he had surgery. He was riding his bike across Iowa. He's an athletic trainer.
Oh, it's so funny. So, because if you rupture at the elbow, you can't bend your elbow and you can't turn your wrist. So that becomes very complicated.
Especially when you're trying to get your if it's your left arm, you're trying to get your lunch out the window of the drive-up. You've got to be able to turn your palm all the way up.
Call.
So,
Nancy, thanks for calling. Pete from Kakana emailed us. He has scoliosis. It's a curve in his spine, almost C-shaped, just below his lowest rib in line with his shoulders. What exercises are good for this? He has pain that he's used to from childhood. He's afraid of what's going to happen as he ages. He's 69 now.
All right. So there are people. Do we know where Pete lives? You said Kakana?
Yes.
Kakana, okay. Mm-hmm. So there are people who specialize in, it's called the Schroth or the Schroth method. It is S-C-H-R-O-T-H. And it is, they specialize in treating individuals with scoliosis. And that would be the best person for Pete to see. They do a ton of neuromuscular re-education and teaching patients how to fire particular muscles to do that. And one of the kind of actually the more famous Schroth individuals that first started doing it, who is now an instructor, is actually from Stevens Point, Wisconsin. She has a clinic up there. Her name's Beth.
Oh, okay. So. The other great place for you to exercise, Pete, is in the pool. So being able to keep your core strong, keep your mobility up, et cetera, without increasing your pain or without increasing the loading on your spine or progression of that curve that you have already. So that would be the go-to for ongoing regular exercise. But starting with a Schroth provider would be the way to go.
Kathy wonders, her husband jerks his leg when sleeping. He also has restless feeling in leg before falling asleep. Would any exercise or massage help?
It's hard to say. There are clinics that specialize in restless legs, so I would start with my medical provider first to see if there is an underlying cause of the restless leg syndrome and rule out any underlying issues, whether they be vascular or neuromuscular or whatever.
Medication related.
Yep. And then once that's been cleared, you can see a physical therapist and they can talk about ways to help improve your sleep.
Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, Lori Tine-Brody, our guests today as we talk physical therapy issues. And they're going to be with us right up until 12:30. And you can join in. Number to call is 800-642-1234. Or email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Jill and Lori. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we look at all kinds of physical therapy issues with our two guests, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, and Lori Tine-Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lots of emails, lots of callers. Let's go to the phones. And Stephen in Whitewater, we give you a chance now. Hi, Stephen.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been having problems with my knees for some time. I've got arthritis in both knees and bone spurs and arthritis in my right knee in particular. This last year, I've started having my right kneecap lock up. And I'll skip a few beats on my left foot, and then it'll unlock and would be okay. But about 6 weeks ago, I woke up in the morning and couldn't walk on it. And I did have x-rays and from my general practitioner, doctor, and my arthritis really hasn't changed and the bone spurs really haven't changed. But nevertheless, I couldn't put weight on that leg.
Sure.
So in the end, you know, I'm taking ibuprofen, acetaminophen, extra strength, two tablets in the morning. And then I'm taking meloxicam in the afternoon, which is a strong NSAID. And that actually is allowing me to function somewhat. I'm just wondering what the prognosis for this knee might be.
Right. So one of the things that doesn't show up on x-rays or plain films is your articular cartilage, and it's the lining on the undersurface of that kneecap in particular, Stephen. And so my best guess is when his knee is locking up, or he feels like his kneecap is locking up, that he's got either a loose body floating around in there, a little chip off his articular cartilage, or he's got some significant degenerative wear and tear into the articular cartilage on the underside of his kneecap that wouldn't make his plain films look different, but his symptoms would definitely manifest differently.
Or,
but wait, there's more.
Oh, yeah, there's more.
Or it might feel like it's his kneecap locking up, but actually it could be his meniscus. He could have a loose body in his joint. And the deeper the source of the problem, the harder it is to pinpoint where exactly it's coming from. So the inability to weight bear feels more like a weight bearing surface to me than the kneecap. So I would, if I had to put my money on something, I'd put it on a meniscus, and either a loose body or a portion of the meniscus that's flipped into the joint.
It's a buck and handle-ish, yeah.
Mm-hmm, blocking the knee. So, in the absence of getting better and weight bearing and getting back to usual activity, I would get an MRI and look at the status of
my
meniscus.
I'd see an orthopedic person. Yeah.
And it might not hurt, as we were just talking about this over the break, the amount of time it takes to get in. It might not be a bad idea to make an appointment with orthopedics. And then in the meantime, if your knee gets all better and you're great and back to your baseline, you can always cancel it and someone else will be thrilled to get in quickly.
On a cancellation list.
But that way you've got it if your knee is not improving.
Yep. Good luck. Stephen, thank you very much for calling. Nicole in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, everybody. I'm not sure if this topic was covered. I jumped on a little late, but I'd like to bring up 2 points. An idea of sticking with the prescribed exercise, I think, has a lot to do with progress. And if someone isn't really seeing progress, they get discouraged and lose faith. And I think for the provider, it's imperative, absolutely, that the exercise program is given and given with a lot of education and follow-up, the proper ways to make movements and use muscles, because once you get fatigued, you're using compensation, and it almost becomes more problematic as you're making wrong movements.
Absolutely.
The problem that you're trying to fix. Right. So, and my second comment is just on stretching. So when you do those exercises, you're tightening your muscles and you're getting them stronger, but you also want to have that relaxation point. You want to be able to stretch and let those muscles get longer, and which is also part, I think, of a really great therapeutic program. So I know that there's a lot of people out there that say, oh, PT doesn't work, but it does. It really does. It's just a matter of really having that follow through and having the right biomechanics with the movement to heal that issue.
I love that comment, Nicole, and I harp many times with the PT students that if you give somebody 3 sets of 10, and they do 25 of them wrong, it's you're really just teaching that faulty movement pattern that you're alluding to. So I would rather have 5 really good ones than 30 wrong. And so teaching patients, as you said, so much time educating them what fatigue feels like, or what muscle substitution feels like, or what bad form feels like, is really important. And we all know that there are days when you can hold a plank for 30 seconds and there are days when you can hold a plank for 5 seconds. And I don't know what's different about it, but you need to always make sure that you have that good form, that good biomechanical movement that you alluded to.
Yeah, the things you said, Nicole, were spot on, and they are really just the tip of the iceberg. And so going back to our previous comment about getting in to see a provider, you know, I've been in physical therapy for a long time. Yeah, Jill's laughing. Okay, I've been at UW for 35 years. Okay, so we'll just start with that. And it was not my first job. Okay. So I remember when we used to see our patients 3 times a week, and we supervised their exercises and we saw if they were doing them correct and we got the right number, we got the dosage right. Now we see our patients, we give them a home program, we send them on their way and cross all our paired organs, that it works and that people get better. But you're absolutely right, and Jill's right. If you don't do the exercises right and we don't have the dosage right and we don't see you back for 3 weeks, we've lost a lot of ground.
Right. And the other thing with the education is teaching patients how to, if this is too hard, this is what you need to do. And if this exercise becomes easy, this is what you do, especially when we're not seeing them for 3 weeks.
Exactly. And it's not a dichotomous variable. It's not like, oh, it's not working, so I'm going to stop it. You're absolutely right. It needs to be modified. We need to figure out how to do the exercise so that we can get some traction on moving them forward, not just stopping it. So, but yeah, there's a lot there, and thank you for that, Nicole. Yeah. That could be a show in and of itself.
Exactly. Yeah. Our utopian PT.
Thanks, Nicole. Appreciate the call. Well, let's go to Amber in Cedarburg. Hi, Amber.
Hi. I have a question. I had a knee replacement last year. I'm 14 months out, and I still have pain. It's like constantly aching. It still feels warm. It's still swollen. I can use my knee, I can walk fairly far, but it always hurts. And I went back to PT, and they're just like, strengthen, 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 which I'm doing and I've done. And I had joined a gym in January, so I did that for 6 months. I'm looking for any other ideas as to how to end the pain.
Yeah.
That's a great question. So is your surgeon aware of this? Just to make sure that there's nothing going on intra-articularly, have they taken x-rays to make sure there's not any loosening or anything like that, Amber?
Correct. Yes, they did x-rays at my 1 year, or I guess a little before that. My general practitioner did the x-rays, but my surgeon saw them.
Okay.
Because I may have fallen a few times this winter, but they said everything looks good.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fairly, I see that more than I would like to see it, that people are still having a lot of pain several months after their surgery. So, you know, one of the things we try with some of those individuals is doing some rehab in the pool where they're not putting all of their weight on that joint and see if we can sort of restart things again, sort of from the beginning, especially if you've taken a few falls and bumped things around and maybe stirred up a little bit of synovitis. So seeing if we can sort of backtrack and restart at a lower level and get you back up to where you were before. That, you know, these joints just are tend to be angry. They've gone through a lot. If you had seen what a total knee replacement looks like, it is a lot of trauma to your leg, and some people just have more difficulty recovering from that trauma and just sort of the regular sort of falling, bumping it around again can perpetuate some of that. So if you haven't tried a pool, you might try that and see if we can sort of restart.
Yeah, I think maybe switching up your rehab is probably a good idea. So sometimes you have to, for lack of better terms, I say backdoor my way in. So maybe we need to start with more gluteal strengthening, more core strengthening, more calf strengthening, and kind of let the bigger muscles around the total joint replacement just simmer down a little bit and then kind of revisit them and put them in the pool in the meantime. So it may just be that you need a little paradigm shift in your rehab, Amber.
There you go.
But yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck, Amber. Thank you very much for calling. Tom and Alma, we'll go to you now. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hello, folks. I just called because I just love talking to you ladies, and I just wanted to say hello.
Hi, how are you?
No, actually, what I've got pain in my hips, both of them, when I'm walking, and it starts out and it becomes very acute. It's right on the outside of the hip. It's almost debilitating after I go try to walk even 150 feet. And I don't know, is this bursitis? Is it muscular? Is it skeletal? I got no clue. What does bursitis actually feel like?
So it could be bursitis, but it would be a little unusual for the bursitis to be bilateral. I mean, it's possible. The minute somebody says bilateral, I always think something central, like lumbar spine, something along those lines, referral from the lumbar spine, something along a radiculopathy of some sort.
Right, right. But usually it would go farther down your leg than just to the outside of your hip. When you say the outside, are you talking about like if you take your fingers and put them on the very outside, there's kind of a bone there that's where it hurts?
And then it sometimes will almost radiate down the side of my leg a little bit there too.
Okay. Well, It's unlikely to be a primary hip problem, which usually manifests as groin pain. It could be bursitis, but why did it just come on now? Jill wants to say something.
Well, so it comes on pretty acutely at 150 mm-hmm. feet. If you sit down at, if you sit down at 150 feet, Tom, does it go away relatively quickly?
Yes.
That sounds like low back
mm-hmm.
to me. Yeah.
I think you need to see somebody. So Jill and I have talked about this where you have this, there's hip pain, maybe there's back pain, maybe not. It's sort of a no man's land. There are so many pain generators in that area. I mean, the list is pretty extensive of things that can be causing pain down into your hips and legs from that area that you really need a good assessment to figure out where the pain is coming from. Because if we direct the intervention, say, at your trochanteric bursa, we could be completely missing the boat.
Right.
So I think a visit or two to figure out what's going on and directing the treatment toward that area makes sense.
Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you, Tom, for calling. Doug in Sister Bay, we turn to you now. Hi, Doug.
Hello. My question has to do with, I think it's muscle pain, but it started, I had a heart attack in April of 2018, and when I left the hospital, they had put me on 5 medications, and, well, one of them was nitro that I've never taken, but 2 of them were statins to lower my cholesterol, and as I would, within that next several months, when I go in for a checkup, they'd say, any joint pain, any, you know, and I go, nope, I denied it all. I didn't have any. And they would, or they say, okay, great, you know, you're doing good. And I was going through the cardiac rehab, and I did real well there. And then so come September or so, maybe October, all of a sudden I was getting to the point where I couldn't go up very many stairs. And I had been doing a lot of exercising, riding my bike, putting a lot of miles on. But I was getting to the point where I was getting real weak in my legs, mainly, not my upper body at all. But I was so weak, I couldn't hardly get up a flight of stairs. And we have 3 steps up into our office at work here, and I was winded, or not winded, but sore or burning
fatigued.
Pain in my legs.
Fatigue,
really,
yeah.
At this point. Yeah, fatigue. There you go. Yeah. And so I thought, you know, on my own, I just stopped taking the statins to see if that was going to do it. And that, so that was then and Thanksgiving time, say. And nothing really changed. And then I made a doctor's appointment. I talked to my cardiologist, well, his PA, in January. And he said, and this was just on the phone, he said, I want you to go in and get a blood test. And let me know by noon, or I should know by noon. And he called me, that was on a Friday, and he called me in the afternoon and said, I need you to go to the hospital, check yourself into the ER. Well, what it was my CK level or CPK level was through the roof. The high end of normal was like 900, and I was in the tens of thousands yet then. And he said, we need to flush this out so it doesn't plug up your kidneys and da da da.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that all seemed to be getting better. The level has never come down into that 900, but I'm back down into the, I don't know, like 2,000 or something. So
is this created, so there are muscle issues connected with this to the medication?
Because it seems like my upper legs and maybe lower back I just haven't been able to get those muscles back as much as I
would like.
Right. So they have cleared you medically in terms of the muscle problem. So the CK levels that's a measure of muscle damage, like you're throwing off proteins, and so that's what we see in the rhabdo.
Rhabdomyolysis. That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah. Yeah, so do they feel like they know the source of the muscle problem?
Well, they blamed it on the statin.
On the statin,
so they took me off of everything other than a tiny little bit of a blood pressure med.
Okay. So. All right. Okay. So here's what you need to do. You need to go to physical therapy, and you're going to need to be rehabilitated through this. What is the end point? I don't think we know with this kind of a situation. I know that people who have been on statins for a long time and have muscle issues, it takes a long time to recover from that.
Right.
And the end point is unclear. You had a really extreme case.
Right. I would say you're definitely an outlier. This is definitely an outlier. Yeah, definitely an outlier on the bell-shaped curve.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think you need to be in physical therapy and have some supervised exercise to start to get you back. I would actually start you in a pool where we reduce the amount of load on the muscles of your legs to try to strengthen you and build you back up. But it'll be a slow boat.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question, Tom, because I'm curious about this with the CK levels so high. Did you have dark urine? Was your urine dark throughout any of this process when you went off your statins, anything like that, when you had this fatigue? Did you notice any changes in the color of your urine?
I don't recall that, no.
I was just curious, because a lot of times with rhabdomyolysis, you see darkening of the urine, and I was just curious if with something like this you did it as well. Yeah. Thank you for that information.
Doug, good luck.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Thank you very much for calling. Jane in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi. I had two falls. One was like a year and a half ago where I tripped over the laundry basket and came down on my knees on a ceramic floor and banged my head. I thought I broke my cheekbone. But anyways, I just iced it and they swelled up, you know, like a couple of grapefruit, you know, and then but it was pretty achy for, you know, that like a year. And then just in June, it was July. I was coming out of a restaurant and I tripped over this like big thick threshold because I kind of got blinded by the sun a little bit when I came out.
And did the same thing?
Went flat, but the door caught my foot, ripped my shoe off. I went flat. You know, like a pratfall in a movie, and on concrete, but it had a rubber mat there, so it kind of saved me. I did go to Ortho Now, it's called, and you can get an x-ray that day, and they didn't see anything like fractured or, I guess.
But
like
they're touchy. But they're touchy.
Your kneecaps.
Yeah.
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 So I guess a chip would show up on an x-ray, right?
Right. Yes, it would. Chances are that you're really bone on bone between your kneecap and the underlying bone. So there's some articular cartilage, but there's nothing else to cushion the undersurface of your kneecap from the bone below it. So when you land on it, it really irritates your articular cartilage. And, you know, in the absence of perfectly shaped legs and alignment and body weight and everything else, it's going to take a long time for the articular cartilage underneath those kneecaps to recover. So when you said it took a year, not the least bit surprising to me. And now you've done it again.
Exactly. And that articular cartilage does not show up on x-rays. So even though it may look like you have this perfect alignment, you can irritate this articular cartilage and it will not show up.
Right. You can get fuzzy, fraying and
flaky stuff.
So unless you have an MRI, it's not going to show it. But the point being, there's no surgery for this. This is a physical therapy issue.
Yep.
So they send you to physical therapy. They work on your mobility of your kneecap. They work on strengthening the muscles that support it. And it may help your recovery, but it's going to take a long time.
And Jane, good luck. Appreciate it very much. And Jill and Lori, always appreciate your visits too. You'll be back in a month and we'll do this all over again.
Yes, sir.
Sounds great.
All right. Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. And Lori Tine-Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW-Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And great to have them with us, and they'll be back next month, and we'll talk with them again. Just to look ahead to tomorrow, we talk about pet care. Keeping our cats and dogs clean can be a challenge, and we'll talk hygiene with a Lomira veterinarian. So that's tomorrow. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.